Welcome to The Standard. The Standard is on a mission to champion the pursuit of excellence and fight against the celebration of mediocrity. For those who refuse to lower their standards, for those who can't raise their own, this is The Standard. For fitness, for family, for life.
It's been a while.
It has been.
I wasn't at the first one.
Oh, then you missed out.
I know. Well, it was like one of the most, downloaded shows.
Well, when you spit out terms like firepotamus,
yeah,
and I think redundant protoplasm. What else? What
redundant
else?
Redundant piles of protoplasm.
What else we got?
Bitch back.
Yeah.
Well, you know, before we get started, as you
we're already started.
Well, yeah, let's before go we really get going,
before you drop more f bombs on
just
our podcast,
say, you know, I'm going to do my best to keep it family friendly.
No, you're not.
I don't really know what's going to come out of my mouth next.
Yeah, you never have.
So I apologize for that in advance. And if anyone, you know, of the dozens of listeners that are going to be listening to this, if anyone has a problem, you can contact me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm easy to find. And
I'm sure you'll respond back nicely.
I will. I mean, we can talk about
you will.
We can talk about their feelings and get them all smoothed out and make sure they feel better about being a pussy.
Are you still driving officers everywhere? Are they still riding with you?
Yes.
Or are you driving for them now?
That will be my credo till the end of time. Right. Is that they ride with me. I don't drive for them. Although some officers...
Another good line.
Yeah. Some officers are certainly better than others. And currently, I've been fortunate enough to have an officer now for several years who is, in my opinion...
Do you know that your headphone?
You're
one of them's
an idiot flipped. Right now. I did look at that.
What is it wrong?
It's backwards. You gotta flip it.
You're like, why am I only hearing things from?
Oh,
is that better?
It is.
How do you drive?
What?
Yeah, you're in charge of.
I don't have to listen to anything when I'm driving.
It's true because everybody rides with you.
Yeah.
Who is your officer? Is Adam?
Yeah.
Ah, it is Adam. One.
Man. I like that. Another great guest.
I like that guy.
He actually, there was a learning curve with Adam when I first started driving for him. I almost said it. When we first started working together, because his level of passion and competency for the job, I had to figure out, all right, where do I fit in now in this relationship with him? You know, because he knows stuff that I don't, you know, he actually knows how to do his job. So I have to figure out, all right, how do I do my job now that I don't have to worry about this guy at all? You know,
you're saying that like it's a rare thing.
Well, you know,
I mean, is it?
In your experience, is it?
In my experience, I've always sought out officers that I didn't have to worry about.
Mm.
You know, but you always, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you get a shit bag. You know, you know, where you're like, oh, great, and now I got to do his job too.
Right,
but you know.
Well, that was like 3 or 4 years ago you came on, right? I think so.
It had been longer.
It was like episode...
It's before me.
It was before episode 20. I remember that. Like, had to be in the first year.
Yeah.
But what's changed?
You're
older. I'm older.
I'm much older. I'm now, you know...
Certainly not any better looking.
Since I wasn't at the first one,
yeah.
How did you get into all this?
Get into what?
Into the fire service. Is it someone like...
Yeah, let's tell that story.
Well, no, I'm saying you have one
it's
of...
our beginnings.
It's our beginnings.
You're one of the most passionate co-workers I've ever had.
I think... How did I get into it? Well, as a man, you know, and I'm only going to talk about being a man because...
You don't know anything else.
I don't know anything else. So this is strictly a male point of view.
You don't even know a boy's point of view because you came out in that mustache.
Right.
Too much of the chagrin.
I've been shaving since the first day. There's always a defining moment or a moment in time where you're no longer a boy and you've reached manhood or you are now at the doorstep of manhood. But it was when 9/11 happened for me. I was in an office job, you know, perfectly capable, you know, physically and mentally to do anything that I wanted, but I was in an office job. And when 9/11 happened, I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
I think a lot of people, you know, do that.
What am I doing with my life? I'm sitting in an office, I'm making money, right? And the job that I had, I was making money off of people that probably didn't have.
What were you doing? Loan shark?
No. I was working in a marketing position.
Okay.
And, you know, marketing is basically convincing people to spend money they don't have. Huh. Right? That's my opinion. And then 9/11 happened. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? How am I serving people?
Do you think it was like that day or in the months later, you're like, oh man, or you saw the things on TV and you're like, those people are out there doing something. And
well, you know, my first reaction was, and I was 30 years old when that happened. My first reaction was I'm going to enlist, you know, and my younger brother actually said, you know what, dude, give that some time. There are a lot of factors here. You know, you're 30 years old, which isn't super old, but you're 30 years old, you're married, you have a child, your wife didn't sign on for that.
Right.
Give it some time. Where are your skills? You know, where can you make the biggest difference? So I let that set for a while.
It's pretty wise, your little brother.
Well, yeah, despite, yeah, despite him being my younger brother, he's pretty wise. And my brother's a cop. So I started doing some ride-alongs with him, you know, figuring out what he does for a living, what his day is like. And immediately, almost immediately, I realized, well, there's no way I can be a cop. No way I can be a cop.
Why not?
So we're going on, you know, these calls for service. And I'm like, I don't want to put this guy in handcuffs. This guy needs a hug, you know. He doesn't need to go to jail. He needs help. And I just don't have that in me. I could not ruin this guy's day. I mean, even though he was a criminal. But I'm like, you need some help, buddy. Come here. And my brother's like,
softer side of Zach Varela.
Yeah. My brother's like, you need to join the fire service. You know.
Did you interact with a lot of firefighters on that ride along? And you're like, oh, I like what these guys are up to?
Not a single one.
Oh, okay.
It was all cops. It was all cops. And, you know, physically and mentally, I am sure that I could be a police officer. But I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I wanted to help people in a different way. You know, I didn't like the fact of the law enforcement part. That takes just a different level of thinking and mindset.
So did you just start testing?
What's that?
Did you just start testing?
Well, I was, you know, I had the luxury of having a job.
Right.
A very good job. And I had the support of my wife, who realized that I was not happy. So I had the luxury of picking and choosing. So I was able to pick what departments I wanted to work for.
What kind of things were you looking for in departments?
I wanted busy and a place that I was going to make a difference. Where I wasn't just going to jump on a conveyor belt, do my 30 years, and then jump off, and no one would remember me or remember what I did or, you know, this isn't a surprise. I'm pretty egotistical and I love myself, but I wanted, you know, I wanted people to remember me.
Right.
And I wanted to make a difference in the community that I was serving. So I was one, I am one of the very fortunate few that the department that I wanted, I got, you know, I never, obviously I tested with a couple other ones, but my first choice was the one I got.
It's awesome.
And I love it.
East Metro for life.
And so now that you have, you've been in the game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to be able to kind of like provide that community with that softer side. And now our job is starting to turn and we're starting to do a lot more police type stuff.
Well,
is that,
first of all, don't ever say softer side to me again. I think
you're going to be kicked off the hosting.
I think so, man.
10 minutes.
I don't think that the job that we do has really changed, at least in the city that we work for, has really changed at all. If we put the person first, you know, and make sure that we're doing our job safely and correctly, there is no difference.
I think there is a difference on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
For example, just last shift, right? Mm-hmm. We got an alter guy running around the street,
mm-hmm.
acid.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not terribly
violent,
mm-hmm.
but not listening, clearly under the influence.
Sure.
He needs medical care. And 10, 15 years ago, when you and I came on,
mm-hmm.
we would restrain a guy. We would take him down to the ground,
mm-hmm.
for his safety, taken to the hospital, and that was the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
Now we do that, and there's almost a likely chance that on the back end is going to be some video.
Yeah.
They were too rough, you know, and come to find out, this guy had a knife on him, right? Yeah. We asked the people, I mean, I don't think he was intending to use it, but we asked the people who he lived with, hey, does he have any weapons? No, no, no. And then, you know, next thing you know, it's laying on the ground. He never went for it, but that's why we do, that's why we do what we do, and we grab the arms and we restrain them, right? So we don't get hurt. They don't get hurt, but now it's like, oh, you were too rough, or you, why did you need to do that? He wasn't hurting
anybody.
Everyone's
got their cell phone cameras out.
Yeah, and I so that I, that's the part that I think has changed, which, and we know personally a few people that are, I mean, their livelihood's on the line right now because of, you know, circumstances. No, we don't need to get into it, but I'm saying that's how the job has changed, right? Certainly has changed.
I am not worried about people filming me. I'm not. Because now I think what has been brought to light in this day and age is maybe we haven't been doing the job to the best of our ability. You know, you're running around the street acting a fool, right? You confront that person, you speak to them, you verbally try to de-escalate or calm them down or whatever, you know, and if that doesn't work, then you physically restrain them to keep them safe. We're not trying to kick their ass. You and I both know, we've seen the guys who are like, all right, it's go time. It's go time. We're going to fuck them up now.
Right.
That's not how we do it. You know, we grab them, we restrain them, we hold them on the ground until we can use soft restraints. We can get them in the
ambulance. There's still narratives that can be told how they want. And that's the difference.
I can't control that.
I understand that. And nobody can, but that's how it's, that's how I believe it's changed. It has changed that way, in that way.
I don't think it's changed for the worse. I think it's a change for the better.
No, I mean, well, I think that there's change for the better, but then sometimes it's used for the worse.
Again, we can't control that, right? But there are definitely guys and gals on this job that are here for the wrong reasons. That, you know, oh, I was bullied in high school and now I'm a firefighter and look at how much power I have and all that. There's definitely guys on the job like that still. But now with some of the rules that we should have been following all along are now actually being enforced. We are better for it. What I think is what we're seeing, though, is that the community is not ready for us to be better.
How do you mean?
Everybody wants us to wants these new rules to be followed until it's their emergency. Right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
And now
aren't you going to do something? Well, wait a minute.
Oh, hold on a second. Wait a minute.
Just 2 weeks ago when we were on this block, you were saying that we were doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Now it affects you and you want it done differently. That happens.
First, I have to use my words. So I'm going to use my words. And now they've run off, okay? So.
Right.
I guess I'll come back when they come back.
Have you noticed kind of anything else? Because how long have you been at East Metro?
2008, buddy.
15 years.
You guys in the academy together?
We were.
Oh, man.
February 2008. So what are we going on, 15?
15.
No, 14.
15. Didn't we just do 14?
I don't know. What is it? 08 to 22. Isn't that 14 years?
Yeah.
So
15 in February.
Glad you're doing pump calculations, man.
It's an art, not a science, bro.
So I actually want to talk to you about that.
Okay.
I don't actually know a lot of people who love driving as much as you do and see it as such a like exalted position.
Yeah.
Did you meet a driver at some point? You're like, all right, I need to be like that guy. Or, I mean, what?
Ever since I was a little kid, I have always been fascinated by, you know, the fighter pilots, the helicopter pilots, fucking Han Solo, you know, all of these people, you know, that are actually driving.
Sure.
And I'm like, that is the man.
Are you back in? Are you back in like your heyday with Top Gun 2 coming out,
dude?
Fuck. I think I'm gonna go see it tonight. By the way,
it is.
I'm going Wednesday.
I know you've seen it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, it is amazing.
And better than the first? No.
It is. The first one hit a spot in our country's time that was just perfect. Right. This one is fucking perfect.
Okay. All right. I'm excited now. All right.
Yeah, I love it. It's not the same story.
Sure. Well, that's good, though.
Yeah. You could almost watch it without ever seeing the first one.
All right.
But I love it. It has got just the right amount of cheese in it to make it.
Good humor?
There's
good, the one-liners?
The good. There's some great
one-liners in there. All right. I'm excited now.
Just the right amount of cheese to make it, you know. I mean, I wanted to stand up and salute after.
Oh, my God. It's I could still see you doing that.
It is so amazing.
Oh, man.
It is so amazing. And I actually think we need more movies like that.
All right. So.
Sorry.
No.
That was a tangent.
Yeah. But driving.
Yeah.
Always wanted to.
Uh-huh.
I mean, going back to what Craig said, was there like a mentor? Like, you get in the job, mm-hmm. and you know you want. Did you know you want to drive in the academy? Is that the position you knew you wanted?
Well, you and I went through academy together, and if you recall, when I was doing the non-emergent stuff, one of the instructors actually asked me if I had a driver's license because I sucked so bad at it.
Oh man,
you know, and that hurt a little bit, but,
sir, I'm marketing behind a computer.
Yeah. Like, it hurt a little
bit. Here we go.
Yeah. But
shave that mustache, Rella. You don't deserve it.
But when he said that, I was like, all right, I'm not even going to drive then. You know?
All right. But then
you get in, then you get on the job.
Yeah.
And people see things in you. And there was a senior engineer after I got my acting engineer, which I did not want because I felt like I was going to kill somebody. And then I had a senior engineer take me under his wing and say, you actually have an aptitude for this. You actually have some skill here. Let's work on that.
I still remember a day in Station 8 where you were studying for the test.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have been promoted at that point. I don't know, to lieutenant, but I remember.
You weren't. I was the first one out of our academy.
To promote to any position? To
anything,
okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it was. I still remember you're studying for a test. I'm like, oh, you're studying for it, you know? Like, well, I don't take tests to finish last.
That's right.
That always stuck with me. I don't, mm-hmm. not just because you said it. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I've always revisited that every time I took a test or somebody else is, you know, studying for tests. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you don't take tests or play a game to not win, take tests to finish last, you know? It's
just right.
Mm-hmm. There needs to be more of that mentality for sure.
And I didn't finish first.
No, I don't think you did.
And actually...
Did you finish last?
I didn't.
Oh.
But I think about that mentality. I rarely finish first, but that's always my goal.
Yeah. I mean, it should be.
I don't take tests to...
Fail them. I think that's actually what you said. Take tests to fail.
I don't take tests to fail them.
Yeah. Have you ever failed a test? Like promotion?
Intentionally? Like, if I actually was after, you know, if I actually...
Yeah, something you were going after.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It just takes a little effort.
Yeah, or a lot of effort.
What about the driver position? Do you feel like a lot of people get into it to loaf? Like, do you see that? I feel like I see that a lot.
I believe that is going to be my campaign till I retire, is trying to change that culture where... A driver operator gets behind the wheel, and that's where they hide.
Right.
Because you're going to be found out.
At the worst possible time.
It's the only time.
Yeah.
You're going to be found out, whether it's tomorrow, next week, next year, or 10 years from now. You are going to be found out. You're going to be on that incident where what you're doing matters, and you're going to fuck it up, and you're going to fail, and somebody's going to get killed. And you really are, as the engineer, out there on your own. Because the chief certainly doesn't know what you're doing. You know, the officer doesn't know what you're doing. And it's not that they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to do what you're doing.
They don't really have to. Like, it's not their job.
It's not their job. And the engineer is the ultimate freelancer. We really don't have to answer to anybody. And we have to be able to work by ourselves.
But you have to answer to everybody. When it comes down to, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much responsibility on that spot. Whereas if you're in the back seat, you have a lot of people mm-hmm. that, hey, man, I can't get this person to the windowsill. There's someone to come help you. But if you're out there on your own and your pump goes down, no one's going to stop to help the engineer
figure shit out.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be inside.
Yeah. Except the other engineer, the other engineers.
True.
I mean, we're almost our own little team of people out there. And it's not seen every day. You know, we're kind of like the pitcher on the baseball team. We're just fucking weirdos. You know?
Hey, man.
No, sorry, buddy. Nobody knows what
you know how much fun happens in the bullpen?
Yeah, I do.
Where's your bullpen then? Where's the engineer's bullpen? Outside?
Outside.
In the pump panel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We all got our shirts off. Pulling levers.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
But we're just weird, and no one really understands what we're doing, and no one appreciates what we do until we fuck it up, right? In the middle of the night when everybody's sleeping in the back of the rig, we're awake, still driving.
Oof, yeah, that's true.
We're still, you know?
I don't know how you guys do it.
99% of the time, it's fine. But we still have to pay attention to where we're going, what we're doing. Is some asshole going to jump out in front of us? You know, we still have to stay sharp. And that's the part of the job that I think everyone takes for granted.
Yeah, I mean.
Is that it is every day we have to operate that rig. Every day. We're the only ones who never get smoked, you know, who never go callless for the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have some times it's hard to drive home from work, right? Mm-hmm. 6-7 calls after midnight. I mean, you do like pretty much a stand-up 24.
Yeah.
It's hard to drive home, and I'm not driving a, you know, gigantic vehicle filled with three other people with families and things like that. You know, it's – I have the utmost respect for good drivers.
And, you know, people don't know if you're good or bad until you fuck something up. And the fact that we're driving a 40,000-pound vehicle, or in some cases an 80,000-pound vehicle.
You could step up to the 80,000-pound if you'd like.
Yeah, when are you going to become an adult?
Well, yeah, you know.
Stop playing kid games on that engine.
I prefer to work for a living. Earn my paycheck.
All right, it's too much weight for you. I get it.
Yeah, you know. Weight of manhood is heavy.
Your bitch back can't handle 1,000 pounds.
I'm going to kill you.
If you're afraid of heights, too, it's okay. No. You know?
I'm actually at a station, a double company house, where I'm fortunate enough to be able to get. I'm not assigned the ladder, but I am fortunate enough to work several shifts a month.
It's actually pretty good. I mean,
on the ladder.
It's a good spot to be in.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of both.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be a while before I get to a ladder because the guy in front of me is senior to me and super passionate about staying there. So I'm just going to sit back and learn from him. And when he decides to make a move, I will fill the spot to
get back in there.
Ability. Yeah.
So been on for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You are not 30 anymore.
No.
So.
Oh, you came on like 36?
That was pretty close. I mean, I was the oldest guy in the
academy. No, it was 25 and 35, I think. Because I was 25, you were 35.
Because we're 10 years apart.
Yeah, and then we,
I think you're arguably one of the most fit dudes on the department. What, kind of, how's like that? Well, yeah, gee, even that last Rick drill training we had, like we came back and we're like, oh, man. Things are different, but you have to train different. You have to, you know, kind of treat your body different. Like how have you kind of handled that transition?
It's a work in progress. I think I'm learning as I go.
What are some things that, because it seems so easy for especially people in the driver position to say, hey, I'm in my 40s now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, leave something in the tank and I don't want to.
Dude, fuck.
But is that
leave
not.
Leave something that, in the tank.
Is that not something you've heard?
Oh, yeah, I've heard it.
So how do you say to those people, like, this is kind of the path you can take to not become a fatopotamus, would you call
him? Oh, a firepotamus.
A firepotamus.
I love that stuff. Some good one-liners from that first one, by the way. We're going to revisit all those. start with firepotamus.
Yeah, a firepotamus.
Define firepotamus.
I don't think I have to define it.
Well, there's got to be some parameters, right? I mean,
I have it in my head. I'm picturing a hippopotamus with a fire helmet on.
First of all, firepotamus.
Wrapped tightly in bunker gear.
Firepotamus has nothing to do with your total mass.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm picturing them having to have like a SCBA belt extender and, you know.
It certainly helps. It certainly helps with the definition. But a firepotamus is a just a piece of shit. I don't know how to. I mean,
yeah, but
you
the
can anyone
obesity can, and out of shape firefighter definitely has something to do with that, right? I mean, that's a firepotamus. I mean, come on.
Sure, but you can have a giant dude or gal, and if they're in the gym working and training, not even in the gym, if they're training at their job, they're not a firepotamus.
Right. But they're not going to be 50 pounds overweight either.
They might be when they start. You know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, you do have to make that decision to no longer live that type of lifestyle. So you are going to have to be that for a while. I think that's where most people quit. It's easy to stay in shape. I think it's hard to get in shape.
Do you think that you should be hired into this profession 50 pounds overweight, though?
No, but I think things happen, right? Life happens.
Yeah, I get that.
And so now it's like, all right, now I'm going to make the decision to get back to where I want to be. And there's that transition period that is absolutely the hardest,
but
where you don't feel good, you don't look good, but you still need to keep going.
And as you age and get older in the job, I think this becomes a little bit more clear. The physicality of the job is going to change as you age. That is a cold, hard fact. And if you've been an athlete all of your life and physicality has come relatively easy for you, it's going to be harder for you as you get older.
I also think if you've been an athlete your whole life, you've learned how to adapt to, say, an injury or an ache or a pain. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much of the last 5 years has it been like that for you? It's been like that for me. It's like, okay, well, I don't move as well that way. I got to figure out a more efficient way to do this.
Whereas if
you're not an athlete, you might just mail it in, give up. Like, I can't do that anymore.
Every academy has got guys and gals in it who are not athletes. Right?
Yeah.
But they're not out of shape. They're just goofy bastards. You know, they just.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call them firepotamus.
No, and I'm that's not what I'm defining. I'm just saying that I think that those people, those types of people, have a better time adapting than the ones who are just relying on their physicality. When you're young on this job, it's easy.
Man, I don't disagree.
I think go just fast and hard.
Thinking about it right, you know, quickly right now.
Yeah,
I would think a person who's been an athlete their whole life would be way better at aging in this profession than somebody.
It is a tough pill to swallow when you come to the realization that you are not.
Yeah, but you
the
have
fastest, the strongest, you know, the youngest. That is a tough pill to swallow.
But as an athlete, you're still in a better spot, I think.
Like, if you've relied all your life on your ability to get things done physically.
Well, I don't think relied is right. I mean, you're an athlete. You worked for it. So that work ethic is going to continue, and you're going to figure out a way to get stuff done. I think you're right. There's everybody who competes at a high level. When that starts to disappear, you start having these thoughts of like, "Ooh, man, am I going downhill, or is this what aging is?" You know, and there might be some borderline depression with that. But I still think you're in a way better spot. You know how to stretch, you know how to overcome injuries, you know how to, you know, you know what workout regimens, like, increase performance.
But you're just talking specifically from the physical part of the job.
100%. But I think if we want to talk mentally, I mean, there's a lot of failure involved in athletics.
Right.
You know,
fail more than you succeed.
Yeah, in getting back up and learning that, hey, just because I failed there doesn't mean I can't ever win that or do that task. I've personally seen from people who've never competed in athletics in the fire service, they really shy away from competition, and they tend to not even want to challenge themselves at all. They don't want to approach that, you know, fine line of failure versus, you know, winning or succeeding.
You don't have to have the will to succeed. You don't have to be an athlete to have the will to succeed.
Right. I agree with that.
Right.
Yeah.
There are guys that did not grow up being an athlete, but they have that will to succeed and that will to do better and to be better. And I think those are the types of guys, you know, who did not play sports. You know, maybe they, I don't know, surfed or skateboarded or did some other goofy
But I would consider that active. I mean, there's some. It doesn't have to be like an organized sport.
But
somebody who sat behind a desk their entire life or played video games is not going to be as prepared.
I don't think we're talking about those types of people. But you know,
so you're talking about sports versus just like,
you know, maybe the kid that,
like, I think at a skier. That's an athlete to me. Like,
or maybe the kid that spends his time skateboarding behind the school smoking cigarettes and stuff, right? That guy is not an athlete, but he has a will to do, you know? I mean, those are the types of guys that, you know, hang out behind the high school and they're skating around on their boards and they're smoking cigarettes and then they graduate high school maybe and then they enlist or something, you know? And then they do something special and they cultivate that desire to be the best to win. They were never an athlete.
What kind of stuff are you doing now that you feel like is the most important for staying in the game physically for as long as you have?
It's easy. There's three things that I have to do: lift, run, and train. And very rarely do those three things come together. When I am lifting, I am lifting. When I am running, I am running. And when I am training, I am training. You know? I am not training in the weight room. I'm lifting in the weight room. I am not lifting while I'm running. I'm running. When I'm training for the job, I'm training for the job. I do not turn it into some kind of CrossFit games. And I think I've said this before. There's always a time component when we're training because these things exist in real life. You have to be able to get a water source to your engine in 2 minutes, because if you've got an attack team flowing water, you're going to cavitate, right?
Yeah.
You have to be able to get it into pump gear, you know, within this set time limit. Otherwise, the guys are going to be sitting outside holding their dicks in their hand waiting for you to figure out how to get it into pump
gear. There it is.
Right?
So my question, I challenge that because I agree that there are moments where, especially lifting, mm-hmm. you can really screw your shit up if mm-hmm. you're trying to do that when, you know, especially like a movement like a deadlift. Mm-hmm. You have to be very intentional with that movement. Mm-hmm. You know, racing through that is not super smart. Mm-hmm. I think I've found a lot, and I think I speak for Tom too, a lot of benefit in being in your gear and doing high cardiovascular movements like on an echo bike or dragging. So not necessarily training for the job, mm-hmm. but you kind of are training for the job. You're just not doing fire skills.
In the weight room.
Sure.
Okay. You're deadlifting. You hit the nail on the head. It is a purposeful, controlled movement.
Yeah.
Because not only are we training our muscles to get bigger and stronger, we are training our muscles to operate in the correct way. And if you're doing fast, sporadic movements in the weight room, you're fucking that up,
mm-hmm.
right? We're trying to achieve a certain amount of muscle memory in the weight room so that when we're on the fire ground, when we're training and we do something similar to deadlifting, i.e. drag an LDH down the street, your muscles are strong enough to do it and they have an idea of the appropriate way to move so that you aren't thinking about, okay, I have to make sure I'm not lifting with my back. You know, you just pull that LDH and you fucking go.
So you feel like the muscle memory of being deliberate in the weight room
translates onto the fire ground when we're training. Now, when you're only doing crazy shit in your gear, that is when you're going to get injured.
You think so?
I know so.
Well, I guess
let's define crazy.
Yeah.
If you're...
I guess here's why I'm saying this is because the sterility of the gym mm-hmm. is hard to recreate all the time when you're on the fire ground. You can't always get in those positions that are...
What are we doing in the gym? What are we doing in the gym with the weights?
What do you mean?
What are we doing?
Picking them up, putting them down?
What is the goal in the gym? To get stronger.
Sure.
It's not to get injured.
Right.
Right? It's not to get injured, and it's not to see... How fast can I bench press, you know, in X amount of time? Is to see how much weight that I can move correctly with proper form and keeping myself healthy.
So then I would say that in gear,
everything that we are doing, everything that we're doing, running, weightlifting, and to some extent training on the fire ground, is to make sure that we are resilient and capable of performing on the fire scene. Training and gear is where is the closest that we can get to what actually happens on the fire scene.
Totally agree.
But running and weightlifting prepares us for the training aspect of it, which then prepares us for the fire ground.
But if your fire training doesn't push you to where you need to be physically, so I guess what I'm saying is like people who are like, all right, I'm going to get in my gear and I'm going to hit this hydrant or I'm going to do XYZ movement.
Yeah.
There's no, they're not accounting for the fact that when I get to this hydrant, I have just run around the house. I have thrown some ladders. I mean, those, it seems like that does not ever get to the training portion of it, right? It seems like most of the training is very like, okay, we're just going to hit a hydrant. That's what we're going to do right now. And then we're going to
pull a hose line. Pants.
And yeah, exactly. Right. I think it's absolutely vital to make sure that when you are training, it's full SCBA, all your bunker gear. And maybe if you all, if you just want to do one task, right? Hey, I want to try and make sure I hit this hydrant as fast as I can. Let's get on the Echo bike for a little bit. Let's get tired. And then that way we can like have a realistic rep of what this is. So to me, that doesn't seem like doing crazy stuff in gear.
I don't disagree with that.
Like, so what would you say is like, what are you doing?
So
like, what kind of thing would you, you walk outside, they're on the front ramp training and you're like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
What the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Why are you deadlifting in your full gear with your SCBA on? What the fuck are you doing? Why don't you start dragging the 5-inch off the back of the rig? If you want to deadlift, run that, you know, run all 1,000 feet off the back of the rig. Just do that.
Yeah.
It'll take a while.
I agree with that.
100%.
Right? Do that. That is a fire ground movement.
Yes. Right? Job specific.
Job specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you deadlifting in the bay with your gear on? That looks fucking stupid. You look like an idiot, you know? Now, if
I wouldn't go that far.
I think there's...
I mean, there's some value in being in the most uncomfortable environment.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And doing tasks.
Then,
and what's the difference between that and picking a victim up?
Then pick a victim up.
True, but we don't always have a victim around.
Wait, you work by yourself?
Well, no.
Solo act?
Hey, sometimes you're at station 45 on the outskirts, and nobody's seen for 24 hours, and you need to create some weight on your own.
Go ask one of those fire potamuses to lay down in the bay and drag his ass across the bay.
I just don't think it's like, what the fuck are you doing? I think it's...
I know.
But I agree. Like, why not just do an actual fire ground task when you're in your gear?
Yeah. Instead of
another rep at doing
deadlifting in your gear, why don't you pick up the pony roll?
Right.
Right? Throw it over your shoulder, which is really fucking hard.
You get used to,
you know,
all your tools too.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right. That is a fire training evolution. Okay.
You know, I completely agree with you. I think
that makes sense.
Well, it does. I think sometimes people are like, fire training, I don't really feel like if I'm out there dragging hose, that's fire training. I think it is, but you know, like you're like, well, we have a 50-foot section attached to another 50-foot section donut rolled with another. So like, to me, that is utilized in a workout that we would do in our gear, but it's always, to me, that is fire training. You're always getting ready for that stuff. You're utilizing the tools that you're going to use on the fire ground in your fitness.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like sometimes I can get blurred a little bit.
Yeah.
So what do you think if you see a guy that's in his gear on air doing the Echo bike?
I think he's suicidal. I mean, but...
But do you think there's some value in it?
Sure.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, it sucks. We've all done it. It sucks.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But now... We're
on the same page.
But I think you're working out now. I think you're working out. You're not... That's not fire training. You're just working out.
You're working out, but I think your main focus there is not fire skills and how many tasks you can get done in a set amount of time.
Yeah.
It's basically heat acclimation.
Sure.
It's basically cardio with the added stress of...
So riding an Echo bike in full gear is stress inoculation.
Yeah.
That is not going to make you...
Heat stress, I would say.
That is not going to make you smarter on the fire ground.
No, but it will it will make you, I think it will make you a better firefighter in some degree.
To some degree, no pun intended, sure. It'll make you a better firefighter, but you'll certainly be able to make mistakes a lot faster than other people if you're only doing the echo bike and in
a figure. No, it's just a part of, like you said, weights, mm-hmm. running, and training. Mm-hmm. I think echo bike becomes, maybe that fits
echo
into
bike
or,
and full
maybe
gear,
that fits into running.
That's more of a running weightlifting.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah.
All right, that is not
air management though too. You know, like we'll do it where you try to get a certain set of calories on a full cylinder. So that's air management,
definitely,
which I think is a fire ground skill.
Why is running so important to you?
Man, that running is the man maker. It is. It is the man maker. Running is a mental game.
I feel like that gets missed a lot in our job.
Yeah. I mean,
and people just don't find it to be that important.
I need you to run a mile in 9 minutes. Okay. Great. Can you run 10 miles? Can you run 12 miles? Can you run 18 miles? Can you run 18 miles without any food or water?
How much are you running these days? Are you running that mileage?
All at once?
No, yeah.
Jesus Christ, no. No. No, every once in a while, you know. But every day, I run a 5K.
Okay.
Every day.
Yeah.
That is my baseline.
So you think that for you, running is just a mental, is it the mental aspect that you?
It just keeps you tough. I can go. I know that I can do 18 miles without food or water before shit stops working.
Right.
Okay. How does that apply on the fire ground? Well, 18 miles is roughly 2 hours, you know? So I know that I can work.
That's fast, man.
It's not 2 hours. There's no way it's 2 hours. It's probably closer to four.
I was going
to
say, dude, that is hammering.
That was...
This episode's brought to you by the Patreon. Our patrons are members that want more from our community. So for just a few dollars a month, you get more episodes, you can get free gear, you get an opportunity for conference calls, and even to vote on future episodes. Check out our website at the-standard.us and sign up. One thing that I think gets missed with the running portion is the ability to create like an aerobic base. There is no better way to create an aerobic base than running.
Running has so many benefits for so many different people in so many different ways. For me, it just makes you mentally tough. It makes you mentally tough.
That is a huge reason why I do it, right? Getting into that that pain cave, that, yep. I don't know, the dark place, whatever you want to call it.
Or not.
What do you mean?
Or knowing that you're in pain. Knowing that you're tired, knowing that you're exhausted, and you're like, you know, fuck it, you know, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
And not be in pain.
Yeah.
You know, or not, at least not acknowledge the pain.
But if you are only training for 20 minutes at a time, that's all your body knows. And we were on that commercial fire for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Cutting route. I mean, we were smoked. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, I do a 20-minute workout every day, that is not going to set you up for those moments when you need to have that.
And you mix it up, right?
Yeah, I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's when I feel pretty good when we do, say, training in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And every shift get on the treadmill, run a 5K in the afternoon. It's like that running really helps.
If I were only allowed to do one thing for the rest of my life, it would be running.
Man. I agree.
I mean, it is the most primitive thing we do.
You don't think it would just...
No, man, we're built for it.
You can't do push-ups. You can't do it. I mean, what about upper body?
No, you only get to pick one thing. So what, are you going to do push-ups for the rest of your life? You
look like a... No, I'm just wondering... I would pick something that was more...
You look like a...
I probably would do the echo bike. It seems like there's just more...
Okay, so I've been...
It's a first world workout. It's a first world workout.
We are built for it. Part of our DNA. It's the reason why we have come as far as we have in evolution.
We're built upright. Eyes are in the front of our head.
Sweaters.
All of our armor's on our back. Our legs are long. All of our levers are long. We're built to run. We're built to seek out our goal. And then, I mean, that's why I don't eat until I've done my run, because I have to chase my food down, and then I eat it.
I like it.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're wise.
Persistent.
You may not look like it, but you are.
I know.
Do you mess around with your heart rate stuff at all?
Oh, yeah. You know, you wear a weight vest. You don't wear a weight vest.
No, I'm saying, do you try and stay in a zone, your heart rate?
I just go.
I'd be interested.
The same way, even though I know you and Eric have been talking about that.
Yeah. I know that Homo erectus probably kept a really tight, you know, really, really kept it tight on his cardiovascular rate.
You know what?
Rate.
I honestly think that a lot of people can do it naturally. I have been trying my hardest to stay within this zone. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that I'm the most comfortable is in that zone. So I think I was probably doing it beforehand, but now I kind of have a better handle on it. And it is, I think it's completely changed my training. And it's basically 180 minus your age. Mm-hmm. You want to stay within 80% of that for 80% of your workouts.
Shit, I can get to my heart rate just drinking coffee then.
Well, that's the thing though. The older you get, the lower that bar starts to move down. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of, and then the other one is your max heart rate, your 220 minus your age.
Well, I don't prescribe to that.
Yeah.
You know, for me, success is very binary. It is. Either I can do it or I can't.
Are you like particular about anything when it comes to like, I feel like I like to have like very tangible pieces of intel, right? Like I don't see you wear a watch.
No.
Like I have a wearable that tells me, but it tells me my calories, my heart rate, my, all these things. Like I like to see all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you care about that at all?
No, I don't.
Calories, nothing. You don't care about any of that stuff.
No, man. If I'm hungry, I'm eating.
I'm in your boat on that. I don't.
Pay now,
it doesn't bother.
That in mind, though, no. I try not to eat like
8 cookies in a sitting.
Although I do, but no, I try to eat food.
Yeah.
You know, now there are people out there that will argue with me. What is food? But
well, what is it to you then? That seems like a pretty easy answer, but
I try not to live on processed food all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's easy. Just eat actual stuff. Now I will hammer bologna sandwiches.
Bologna sandwiches?
Yeah, man, that stuff is great.
That is disgusting. Is that what animal is that?
Isn't it solid garbage from a pig, isn't
it? Yeah, man. It's waste terrible. Not, want not, man. You know? Anybody can eat a fresh pork chop, but can you eat a ground up pig?
Sounds like your standard's very low.
I'm prepped for the apocalypse, man.
Dude, my neighbor's prepped for the apocalypse.
What's going on?
Oh, I just
looking through the blinds every day or what?
No, I just, you know, like when you kind of get a vibe about someone, like, hey man, I know that you have a weapon on you right now. Like that's the vibe I get.
Society's gonna crash, everybody's gonna be looking for, you know.
Well, you kind of saw it in COVID. That's where I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think people are like, oh, shit. The groceries might not always be there.
Mm. Yeah, and I got a whole pantry full of SpaghettiOs in my basement.
I have never
Remember the
seen,
whole toilet paper crisis?
Well, it's happening right now with baby formula. Because, I mean, we went to 3 or 4 different stores and couldn't find any. Mm-hmm. And luckily, our baby's about to hit that point where we can start just doing food, but I feel terrible for the parents who just had kids and now they're stuck in, or if their kids have allergies and they can only get specific stuff, but society's, it's not their job to take care of us. And I think that kind of hit home over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't think it hit home.
Really? Well, obviously.
People are still, I think they learned, they were confirmed in that 1 to 2 year time period that the government will bail me out. No matter what. And it might be tough, but...
The toilet paper thing was fascinating to me. I mean, because you don't even really need it.
It's true. I mean,
there's a shower right there.
Why, dude? You
just take a shit.
If you're not using a bidet...
Yeah, just take a shit. Take a shit and then shower.
Use a bidet
shit,
like a man.
Or shit in the shower.
Sure.
Yeah. And then just waffle stomp.
But I think there is that scarcity mentality, though. Whereas, like... You know, you go to Target and you're like, oh, why is that aisle almost empty? Well, I better stock up before it goes away. And then next thing you know, it's all fucking gone.
Yeah.
And but, I think.
I don't know. I think we kind of skewed off the tangent of why we're wearing watches and why we're not wearing watches.
That's it. What right? This show's all about.
Oh, it's tangents?
We're just running around.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just listen to what my body feels like.
Yeah.
You know?
And you think that works for a lot of people?
I think people just don't know what to listen to.
Hmm.
I really do, you know? Oh, I'm sore. I think I need to push harder. Is now the time to push harder? Or is now the time to maybe figure out why you're sore?
I think people don't know what's like. They just like, oh, my leg doesn't feel good.
Am I hurt? Am I hurt or am I injured?
Yeah, that only comes with experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that only comes with, well, I pushed through that before and that put me out for 3 months, or I pushed through that before and I went away after a day, yeah. You know? That only comes from going through it.
Yeah.
The more you put yourself in the situations, the more you know. I mean, the best doctor you have, Zach, is probably you.
Yeah.
Like, you know your body better than anybody else because of everything. So you know when something's wrong. I think people don't, like, stay in tune with their body over their adult life. And then it's like, well, I don't know what's wrong. I'll just go to a doctor, and he's going to tell me, well, what's a doctor going to do? A doctor's always going to sit you on the sidelines.
Yep.
They're always going to, you know, err towards the side of safety.
Here's some pain meds.
Right.
Go watch Netflix.
But that's not necessarily the best thing, right? I mean, body's pretty resilient, yeah. And you need blood flow. Where if you're injured, you need blood flow, or whether sore, you know, lactic acid, you need blood flow, right? You got to keep moving for the most part. With any injury, you got to keep moving unless you know, tear something and you got to wait for it to actually heal. But for the most part, everything's got to be blood flow.
Yeah,
you got to keep moving.
And when you're in a physical job, which we are, from soup to nuts, this job is physical. All right. Anybody can do this job when they're not hurting.
Mm.
Right? Anybody can do this job when they're not hurting.
Eh,
anybody,
most people can do this job.
Anybody can.
I know where you're getting with
it. Anybody can do this job when they're not hurting. What separates us, what makes us special, is that we are able to do this when we're hurting, because we're always hurting. Somebody is, you know, I said it when I sat down. My hips are so fucking sore right now. But nobody cares. You know,
dude, that's a fact.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
I think the last time we did one of these, my back has been sore since 88.
Yeah, every day since I wake 1988. Up, every day I wake up, it's a roll out of bed. Like, ooh,
yeah,
you know,
you are going to be sore. Things are going to hurt. Fucking suck it up. Be a fucking man. It's time to do
figure
some
figure out how to manage it.
It's time to do some man shit. You know, it really is. And even my wife will say, when you get up in the mornings, you're so stiff. How do you do that at the firehouse? Not at the fucking firehouse.
Right.
This is my fucking fortress of solitude. You
know? I can be weak.
Yeah, in I can the morning be weak, but at the firehouse when the tones go off, it's time to do some man shit.
Yeah.
So stand up, put on your fucking shoes, and go to work.
Funny thing is, so here's a side story. This happened yesterday. So Zach, I'm moving to a couple acres south of town.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm buying man shit, as you call it. Buying tractors and riding mowers and all kinds of tools and fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a riding mower.
Yeah.
I'm at work at the station. I'm scrolling through everything. Like, it's just like, it's consuming my whole day. And I'm sending Sarah, my wife, like these one after another, you know. And I send her this one. It's a Troy-built, like 30-inch lawnmower, you know, like smaller, right? It's made for probably what I'm at now, like fits through small gauge, you know. I sent it to her and I'm like, I got this guy down to $800.
Yeah.
You know, it's like half price and it's barely even used, like 5 hours on it. 10 minutes go by and she texts back. She's like, that thing looks stupid. It's like, it looks like a tricycle. Yeah. And I go, okay, so I guess I'm not getting it. It's like, why would, she's like, you would look so dumb on that. Be like you riding a Vespa.
It's an important fact.
So I text her back and just with this line of like, okay, sorry, sir, I can't buy your mower because my wife says I'll look like a pussy on it.
I would certainly.
And she goes, yep, that's what I would say.
I would agree. If you're going to do man shit, you have to
look like a man. So I went and bought the John Deere yesterday. So,
yeah. Good for you guys. See, that's so where your marketing.
I feel much better marketing about myself.
I feel like John Deere or Caterpillar. There's only two options, right?
So, yeah, you don't want to look stupid.
No, you don't.
Have you thought about what you're going to do after this job?
I used to not, but now I do. And I actually have a goal of how long I want to be in this job. I sincerely believe I can make it till I'm 65. It's still
you wanted 50, to be...
D, what'd we say?
60, yeah, I'm 51.
14?
I honestly know that I can make it till I'm 65 and still be physically, and not just able to do it, but
do it well.
Well, Smitty did it, right? He was about 65 when he left, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And that people guy, like
I did it at a high level.
Yeah, till the last day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so why is that mark important to you?
And that mark might change. For instance, if my wife were to retire, I might pull the plug earlier.
Because you want to go enjoy, you know, that retirement or what's the...
All of it.
Yeah.
You know, I might even want to maybe enjoy my marriage a little bit, you know? I mean, we have a 22-year-old, we have a 19-year-old, and we have a 15-year-old. And we've had children for a long time in our house. And that kind of, you know, it puts the marriage on hold for a while. We actually just went to Mexico at the beginning of this year. And she and I both expressed how nervous we were. Because we have been alone.
Post-kids, you mean?
Right. We haven't been alone for any extended period of time.
So you're like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah. Am I still going to like you? You know?
Wow.
Are we still going to enjoy each other's company? Are we still going to want to do the same things? You know? And
how was it?
It was great, you know? Throwing out some beers and some tequila and everybody's having a good time. So, but in all honesty, I'd like to enjoy my marriage after this to see what we're like.
Because you both have changed so much since you guys, before you guys had kids.
Yeah. Is she still the person she was?
A saint of a woman to be with you.
Everybody says that. I don't get that.
Everybody says that about me, too, and they're probably
fucking amazing.
Hey, well, Tom, you are a piece of shit, but Zach, I love you, buddy.
Yeah.
So what do you, how do you feel like your marriage has been so successful through this three kids, through you changing jobs, her supporting you, you know, kind of through that process?
Don't sweat the small stuff and call them out on their bullshit. Mm. That's both ways. And I'm not saying I call her out on her bullshit a lot because most of the time it's her calling me out.
How does that go?
What do you
it's
mean?
Pretty tough. When she calls you on your bullshit, it initially you're like, shut the fuck up.
Dude, it's like, I mean, sometimes I wish she'd just kick me in the balls.
Instead of making you feel
it'd be less painful.
Inferior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be less painful, you know, than when she's like, you know, you're kind of being a bitch right now. You're kind of a whiny bitch.
How do you come, like, how does your self-esteem weather that storm?
Well, it's a great question, and I'll tell you how. I have an enormous ego.
No.
That I have spent years cultivating. So when that shit happens, you know, like when your wife calls you out on your bullshit, or you experience a failure at the firehouse, or somebody on your crew starts busting your chops or something, my ego is so big. It's just a fucking dent, you know? It's like shooting a BB gun at an asteroid, you know? It's going to hit.
You
it might
feel
leave.
That?
Yeah.
I feel it, man.
I'm good.
It's going to hit. It might leave a mark, but it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop me.
Do you feel like you need to kind of cushion the blow when you do that with your wife? Do you feel like you need to approach that in any different way?
No. Not with her.
Yeah. And that's always been the case?
It has. I think that's probably what drew us together was she doesn't really, at least with me, she doesn't mix words a whole lot. And I very rarely consider how my words will affect her.
Do you have all girls?
Yes.
Have you had the same experience with them, or do you feel like you kind of need to parent each one of them a little bit differently?
You have to parent each kid very differently. Not very differently, uniquely. You know? My oldest refuses to let anyone see her cry.
Hmm.
And she's been that way since a little kid. When she got so upset that she wanted to cry, she'd go up in her room and do it by herself.
Are you that way?
I don't know. I haven't cried.
So yes. Yes is the answer.
I haven't cried since 1971.
Whoa.
What happened in 1971?
Yeah, doctor slapped me on my ass.
Well, you just came out, huh? Pinch?
Yeah.
You dried off your mustache and walked out of there?
Mm-hmm.
So that's your oldest daughter?
That's my oldest daughter, yeah.
Does she feel like she needs to like protect the rest of the family kind of thing?
I don't know. I think in her mind, shows weakness, and she's right. But you know.
Well, here's the thing about emotions and crying.
Yeah,
like I think there's definitely a push in the last few decades, like mm-hmm. don't be afraid to vent or get it out. Don't bottle it up.
Yeah.
You know, talk to someone. That's valuable.
Yeah.
Well,
but there, I still feel that if you're unable to stay composed in a conversation or an argument or a debate, you know, or like defending yourself, an attack, you know, whether it's like in the workspace or at home, especially in professional environments. Like, let's just say you need to go talk to your manager because of the way you're getting treated by, say, a coworker or the manager themselves. If you burst into tears right away, I just don't think that that's going to present your case. Like, you have to be able to compose yourself.
Crying is like jerking off, dude. You know?
Oh, here we go.
Serves a purpose, but it should be done in private. So it
is. You know? But there's a time for it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. For both.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's done in private. You don't do it in front of people.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone gets uncomfortable. It's not the way it should be done.
I don't know which one we're talking about anymore. Doesn't matter, right?
He's right.
Yeah. It's a fucking animal instinct reaction that we can control 100%, you know?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people who feel like they can't, though. Like, they can't express themselves that way ever. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think that's healthy either.
Are we talking about crying?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, we moved on from your metaphor.
I don't want to talk about crying. That's.
But this is exactly what I'm saying, right? Like, it doesn't make you any less of a man.
But
if you can't control it when you need it, then it does.
It prevents your ability to get your point across, to sometimes to have a productive interaction.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
And I think it's more professionally. Like, when you're dealing with people you work with in any industry, if you can't have conversations without getting super emotional, like, people are going to tune you out, stop listening to you.
If you're going to be an alpha primate in this world and you start crying, you've lost control of yourself.
I'm with you, but there is time when you can. So, like, when you get out of your bed in the morning, right?
Yes.
You are in a safe spot, right? No one, that is your fortress of solitude, as you said.
Yeah.
That is the time when you are, when no one else is relying on you to be strong.
Did I just win the Super Bowl?
What do you mean?
That's about the only time I can think about crying. As if I had won the Super Bowl.
I don't know. I don't know how you get
there. How about this?
Yeah.
Okay. Both your daughters are competing.
Yes.
And let's just say they win a national championship in their event or something.
Uh-huh.
Does that bring a tear to your eye? I mean, think about all that.
Here's
work.
Why. Here's why I feel. You put in I feel bad you for you.
Yeah. Don't feel bad for me.
I do.
Why?
Because there is a spectrum of emotions. Right, going all the way from the most elated joy that you could possibly feel, and then on the other side of that is just this complete release when you know, you get to that point where you can just no longer handle, right? This whole spectrum, and you're not touching some of it, right? Bro. That's a sad thing.
Is it?
I think so.
I don't think so.
It's not to say that he's not dealing with.
Well, it's got nothing to do
with the issue.
It's got nothing to do with dealing with it. We all deal in different ways.
I think it's just a certain level of response that he has.
Yeah, but it.
He just doesn't use tears.
I just don't cry.
It just doesn't make you any less capable of dealing with things if you do have that as a release. As long as it's done in the right time. I guess we're gonna agree to disagree on that one. I'm just, that's, you know, my own personal.
The hell are we talking?
I guess
about
the weakest.
All right. So, what are we doing in the fire service these days? You doing any teaching? You doing anything like that?
Because
last time, I think after your first time on this podcast, you were teaching a class, right? You just taught a class at firemanship or something after that?
I did a lecture. Actually, I did a lecture at the Fools International Conference. Yeah, all right. That was here.
What was it on?
More or less, it was on me, but it was being a being an engineer. You know?
Don't cry on the pump. Yeah. It was pull your levers and shut the fuck up.
It was about it was about being an engineer.
Yeah.
And how to do the job the right way. There's a right way and a wrong way to do the job.
Is that received well?
Yeah, the four people that were there, yeah, I think. No, there were more people than that. But I think it was received well. It was really the first time I'd ever spoken about that topic in front of anyone. And, you know, there were a lot of nodding heads and people came up afterwards and, you know, had some nice things to say.
How are you going to get that out? Because I feel like that's a very, kind of like the people who listen to our show, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very specific type of people. They're already kind of bought in on you.
Yeah.
Already. How do you get that to the slops in the firehouse?
Patience.
Persistence.
Persistence. Stay in the fight. Know that it is bigger than you are. Mm. You know? Since that podcast, there was at our department, and it was actually our chief who kind of thought this would be a good idea, is to develop a group of engineers that were wanting to, able to maybe bring up better engineers. So myself and some other people, like-minded people, have developed a group of engineers on our job that are here helping people who want to either be better engineers or want to be engineers. And we do outside trainings. I guess we're not relying on the department resources to train these engineers. You know, it's not that the department won't do it. It's just that the department might be incapable of doing it right now. There are so many things that the department has to provide for the firefighters that are on the job that it's not a priority for them.
It's not the department's job to provide you passion.
Right. So, yeah.
But it is our job as a work group to try and make others passionate.
Or just be good at their job, right? And it has nothing to do with everybody sucks, we need to make them better. It's why don't we just make everybody better?
Yeah.
Just make everybody better. And not really, it's not a fuck you to everybody who in the department. It's a let's just get together and do this. Let's get together and train. Or let's get together and be better. Can we get out to our training facility and get some rigs? Okay, that's great. Let's do that. Maybe we can't. All right. How are we going to work around that?
What are some ways that you have? I mean, I think that is a big issue that people have is, man, mm-hmm. we don't have the resources. We don't have the training hours. We don't.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. How hard is it to stay at a station? You know, you get off duty, you know. Hey, can we work with this rig for 30 minutes? Some other people, you know, who are off duty or whatever, come to the station. We're going to do one thing on this rig for 30 minutes, you know, and you tell that engineer who's on and we'll do your CDL for you, whatever, you know, keep it simple. There are ways to get training in if you want to. Now, are you going to get paid for it? I don't know. Are you going to get overtime for it? I don't know. But if you want to get the training done, we can do that. There are ways to do it. And we don't need to make it a big complex thing. And it's actually been quite, we've had a lot of positive response from our administration and those above us in power in the fire department who are actually supportive of it.
I think everyone gets on this job and wants to be good at it. Mm-hmm. Then something happens and they no longer really care or they feel like they are good enough at it. Mm-hmm. So I think what's cool about what you guys are doing is it seems like you're trying to get people early.
Very early.
Before they make that pendulum swings in their mind where they no longer really are passionate anymore.
Yeah.
You can almost like save them from themselves.
Well, and you start empowering others to participate in these trainings and they will. You don't even have to ask them. They'll just say, hey, you guys are doing something I'm interested in. Can I come? Absolutely. Fuck, you can teach it if you want. We get a lot of senior engineers that are like, hey, I think we need to talk about this. We need to train on this. Fucking sweet. Do it. We'll get you a classroom somewhere and you can talk about it. We'll get you a rig and in a parking lot somewhere and you can show us.
Yeah.
It's not that we are particularly better than everybody else or that we're particularly more knowledgeable. We just give a safe forum for guys who maybe didn't even know they could do it a place to teach. And it's, I think it's very successful. There is level of frustration though.
With what?
Some people just aren't receptive to it.
Oh, well, you're not going to get everybody.
And I'm not talking about administratively. I'm just talking about people who want to be engineers. Some people aren't receptive to it, you know?
You're not going to get everyone.
No. And again, that's where you just need to develop your ego to where it is so big and powerful that if somebody doesn't buy in, well, fuck them.
Some hard work.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, that's... Now we're gonna go off on another tangent. The ego, right? Everybody says, be humble, you know, work humble, be quiet, be a quiet professional. That is the biggest load of shit I've ever heard in my life.
Why?
Because these assholes are walking around, you know, humble warrior across their t-shirt, you know, be humble. I'm like, you motherfucker, you wrote it on your t-shirt. That's the most egotistical thing I've ever seen, you know?
Well, yeah, that's some fake humility.
No, you have to be. You have to have a giant fucking ego to do this job.
Really?
Huge ego. You have to be able to sit there and take the abuse that you're going to get because of what you do. You get onto a crew of four or five guys, right? A good, solid, hard-hitting, aggressive alpha crew. They're going to hammer away at you, you know?
So is that maybe less ego, but actually just self-confidence?
What's the difference?
I think ego has a negative connotation to it.
Why? I think the ego that you're talking about, the way it goes from confidence to cockiness, self-confidence, you know?
What's
I just, again, when I what's look at that.
What's the difference?
Are you looking it up?
No.
What are you doing on your phone then?
I have notes. I have notes. So I have notes because I don't want to get too far off a tangent, but.
I just think ego has a negative connotation. I guess I don't know why.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's negative. Ego, cocky, arrogance, whatever you want to call it.
You have
to have a giant ego to be able to do this job. And an ego...
I think cocky and arrogance can get you into trouble, though.
Again, I don't care.
Don't you think you need to have...
Okay. Somebody thinks I'm cocky, right? Great. They think I'm cocky.
No, but
I know of you and what you can do. Mm-hmm. I think you're labeling yourself as cocky. Mm-hmm. I would say you're confident. I would say you're more than capable of backing up what you say. But the rest of society sees cocky as this guy just talks about himself all day long and everything he can do, and then when it comes time to you know put up or shut up, he sucks. That's cocky to me.
I do talk about myself a lot.
But I'm saying I know personally what you're capable of physically and like on the fire. You back it up.
And part
that to me is
part of a big strong ego is knowing what you can and can't bring to your team.
Right, but that's then you're not cocky.
I can do that. I can't do that. I need someone else on the team to be able to do that, and I need them to teach me how to do it. And your ego has to be so giant and so big and so strong that you can handle that kind of shot, you know?
It's an interesting way to think about it.
If you're, you know...
I actually think we're thinking the same thing.
No, but using different words. See, like, I feel like you're incredibly flexible, right? You can go in and out of being the alpha, like being the alpha. Hey, I am the best at this thing. But you also have a really good way of stepping back and being a student. And that's where I think the difference between being arrogant and like how you say you have a big ego. I just think you have a lot of self-confidence because you need to have a lot of self-confidence to take that back seat and not just be out there in front.
It does get you in trouble a little bit. We'll go back to my officer, my current officer, Adam. When he and I first started working together, it was not fucking, you know, hopscotch and ass grabbing. I mean, it was, there was a lot of tension because he was thinking one thing and I was thinking one thing, and it very often wasn't the same. And it would cause, I mean, we had a few screaming matches in the bay trying to work it out because he's an alpha and he believes this is the way you do things. And so am I. Right. And I don't think you would define those guys on my rig as, I don't think humble would ever collide with their names in the same sentence.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't think
so. You do have another class coming up, though, right? October? You're part of?
I'm part of. It's not my class. It's not my class.
But I'm sure there's, I mean, of the 20 people listening to you, they, yeah. And they would love to see you the in guys, person, man, get your autograph.
Yeah. Take some pictures.
No doubt.
Yeah. The guys from the Lead Stretch Advance outfit are teaching at this year's Mile High Firefighters Conference, and they asked me to do the engineer portion of their class.
Very nice.
Awesome.
And it'll probably, and we're still working out the curriculum on exactly what that's going to look like, but I can almost guarantee there's going to be a fire engine.
Ooh.
And there's probably
some 5-inch.
Some 5-inch, and probably a hydrant. And
what else do you need?
Well, we're going to probably have a couple guys pulling line and flowing water and see how fast you can make things happen with a hydrant, some LDH and a fire hydrant or in a fire engine.
You got anything else in your notes you want to make sure you cover?
Get those glasses on.
Yeah.
I can't read without them. Let's see.
Oh, here we go.
I can't.
Oh, my God.
Do you want me to read that?
No. What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about?
Well, I just want to make sure, you know, you get.
Well, for one thing we are going to do is, I mean, we do have a Patreon episode with him that you can go over and listen to. We're going to have extra.
Yeah. By the way, the whole reason why we have video today is because of our patrons.
That's true.
Do you know about our Patreon?
The what?
Let me tell you about this.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's hear it.
So there is, we have like 10, 15 people who listen to us, right?
Yeah.
Some of them, they want more. They want more episodes. They want to have more content. They want to know kind of what we're up to outside of the podcast. So for a couple extra shekels, they get monthly access to a lot of stuff, free gear, good discounts. And because of them, we've been able to, I'm just going to
turn add like extra benefits, and now video is one of them.
Oh, cool.
Craig just dropped the camera and the tripod, but like now we got Matt Chan doing weekend workouts.
Oh, you know, cool.
So that comes out. So
I saw him on the Titan Games.
Oh man, he's a good dude. Yeah.
We rooted for him on the Titan Games. That was awesome.
He won it.
He did.
So that being said, I think we're done here, but we're gonna go over on the Patreon.
Do you want to talk about some driving things or no? Is there anything you want to know about?
We're going to do on the Patreon.
Is that something different?
Well, it's the special episode that only our patrons get.
Oh, so we're going to do another episode.
Yeah, maybe, you know, 15, 20 minutes longer. And
let's talk about some driving.
Sure.
Talk about, you know, how to actually drive rather than just sit.
Well, you can't drive because you can't see, so.
I can see perfect. I just can't see past the fucking
steering wheel.
I can't see anything from the steering wheel up. How about that?
All right. Well, thanks, man. We appreciate it.